On education will come to order. Welcome, everyone. We have four items on today's agenda. Primarily, we'll talk about the permanent school fund, and I have two bills addressing that, followed by Senator Lynch. And the final item will be Senate File 2370 on P20 partnership. I will ask Senator Saltzman to assume the chair as I get ready to present the bill.
And welcome, Senator Wieger. It's great to see you at the table today.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. The Permanent School Fund. It's a concept that we've heard about but perhaps didn't have too much background on. And that's why the committee, as well as members from the House, went and checked that out during the summer to learn more about the fund. You're going to learn a lot more in a few minutes in a presentation. But keep this in mind. It's the federal government which granted millions and millions of acres across America to states to use land where the proceeds from the use of that land would go for the schools. It's in our Constitution, a permanent school fund, and there's requirements that the funds go for the use of school purposes. It's been discussed from time to time, and I know Senator Stump back in the early 80s was author of a bill addressing this. But the one issue that came to our attention again in our recent meetings was this. While the Constitution creates this, and we have statutory language that has the money from this fund go to education, it goes right out. And that is going to be changed in Senate File 2422. That basically says that the money that is subtracted, and we have a nice diagram that was put together, but at the bottom where you can see the money from the school trust land, it's subtracted. And if I was to visualize this for you, that subtraction where the money goes out will no longer happen. It will stay with the schools or the students where the money isn't should be spent. We're talking millions of dollars each year, perhaps $20 million, and it's growing. When we look at the revenue that's raised from minerals, from timber, and other uses. And so with that background, I will introduce my testifiers, and also I'll make reference to the other legislation, Senate File 2392, which also has the elimination of the subtraction, but then tells people where the money might go, and in this case it would be technology. Some states, for those of you that were on the tour, saw that it might go for a particular purpose. Utah, actually, they submit a grant. I didn't want to make this too administratively cumbersome, but I wanted people to see where the money went. And so we had technology listed in Senate File 2392. So the purpose here today is to have the money in the permanent school fund stay there, not to be subtracted out. And then in the other version, that it would stay there but then go for technology purposes. So with that background, I'd like to have my testifiers present why this legislation is needed, and I'll start with Ray Schwab.
Thank you very much. It was a great tour, by the way. I know that Senator Olson and I were on the tour. Anybody else at the table? Well, we enjoyed the tour because it really gave us a better idea of the vast lands that are there for us and for our schools. So thank you for raging. Also, Ms. Schwab, I know you were involved with that.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. It's a pleasure to be with you today. My name is Grace Schwab, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association.
Could you move your mic a little closer? Thank you.
This issue came to light for me. I was listening to a debate in the other body, and an influential member got up on the floor and started to talk about the school trust fund lands and how much money schools were losing from it. And I listened very carefully, and I thought, oh, that really couldn't be true. So it started to at least spurn within me and within my organization an interest in school trust fund lands. As Senator Saltzman and Senator Wieger alluded to, we spent some time going out and looking at these trust fund lands and what they do for schools around the state, or what they don't do, as Senator Wieger said. This is our proactive model going forward out of that. The members of Minnesota school boards support this around the state, and I just want to give you some background and some context on which to look at these three bills in front of you. You can just follow along. School trust fund revenues for schools. They are not a new or unique idea at all. The U.S. has 45 million acres and about $38 billion in permanent school trust fund lands. Minnesota has 2.5 million land acres and 1 million additional land acres in mineral rights and $635 million held in the trust for betterment of schools. School trust lands, every state in the union had a grant. Most were granted when they became a state. It was part of the original deal with the federal government, held in trust for public schools. Unfortunately, fewer than half of the states still retain a trust for education. Mostly they are located in the Midwest and the Western states. The lands were originally granted out of the General Land Ordinance of 1785. It was a uniform survey system which actually mapped out and laid out where public schools were given. The original states ended up with just one section of township land, one section. Minnesota, being sort of a latecomer to the state dance, was fortunate enough to get two. We got the 16th and 36th parcel of every township in the state of Minnesota. Here's a copy, though. As we've emerged and gone forward, our lands have become somewhat centered around 10 chief counties in Minnesota, and it's evident where the red is are where our school lands are today. In fact, my testifier probably represents school trust fund lands number one in the state, International Falls, right in the middle of the very top, the densest red. These agreements with the federal government go back to our inception as a state, and the United States and their side of the bargain granted land to the states because they didn't want to pay any property taxes on their federal lands. 5% of the land sales went into a trust. The state for itself accepted these lands and accepted the role of a trustee. School trusts are entitled to the same fiduciary duties as a private trust. Now, these are very closely held, significant roles that the state must play for the schools. They must be managed for the exclusive benefit of the beneficiary. They must return full value for use in disposition, maintain undivided loyalty to the beneficiary, and may not use assets to pursue other goals. So keep those ideas in your mind generally about what the role of the trustee should be in the state of Minnesota and watching those lands for schools. Revenues generated from these lands go into a permanent fund. The fund is not spent. Those dollars are not spent. But it generates interest. The interest is the ongoing revenue for schools. But Minnesota's got a problem. We've got a hole in our trust fund bucket. School trust fund dollars go in to school funding, and we actually have runs of what that looks like. And immediately when they go in, they are deducted back out and put in the state general funds. So we've got a leaky bucket. Also, these lands mysteriously shouldn't be kept secret. As Senator Wieger very articulately alluded to, this is something many people don't know much about. The DNR has been coming to education committees for a long time, but we've really never gotten our hands dirty and dug into this issue about how these lands can be managed and where the potential for growth can be. Also, we've got a holy bucket. Some of the ways we make money off these lands are forestry, and there are many states that make additional revenues just after the forest aspect of this. Mining, wildlife, and renewable energy, biomass. There's a lot of new innovation out there that these trust fund lands can do, and we need to be on the cutting edge, not only for the state, but for our students. I wanted to give you a feeling of what the other states around the nation have so you get an idea of where Minnesota ranks and what other states who still have trust funds have. The blue line there are the surface acres, so that would be our surface acres. And, of course, in Minnesota, we add on that additional 1 million acres in mineral revenues. But as you see, we've got we're about the middle of the pack. A lot. Some states have much higher values. Some have much lower. Our market value of the 2.5 million acres looks to be about $600 million. So once again, sort of a middle of the pack. That might be a little bit higher, but it gives you sort of a feel of how other states stack up in comparison. These are how money is distributed to public schools around the nation. And here, Minnesota really isn't in the middle of the pack. We're sort of toward the bottom. So what does the money do for education in other states? I thought a good comparison of what's happening in other states. In most states, it's really not earmarked for one project or less, but I wanted to pull out a couple that are earmarked for you to consider the bill on technology also. In Arizona, they use a classroom site fund that goes directly to classroom expenditures. In Washington, they put it directly into buildings and building maintenance. In Utah, they have a school land trust program, which might be the most exciting area right now. They took a trust fund that was relatively underperforming and have turned that around 3 or 4 times, where money is granted to individual schools with governance by parents and the PTA and staff of the buildings. So it's really sort of a neat way to do business, definitely been very beneficial to the Utah school districts. And Wisconsin funds school libraries, just another way to keep those important functions going at school districts. In Montana, they have, once again, the Technology Assistance Fund, which is also represented in Senator Wieger's bill. What kind of threats do we face? I'm going to say the bottom threat is probably the biggest. Beneficiaries who are unaware. And trust me when I say this is a sleeping giant, a secret here at the Capitol that no one knows about. As such, it's been sort of left to limp along. These three bills, two by Senator Wieger, one by Senator Lynch, are going to jazz up the process, start it, and send those dollars not through the hole in the bucket, but back to our public schools. Some other states have had issues with loans from permanent school funds and taking without compensation, actually land trades, other deals that really aren't 100% trades. We're asking you today, as the Minnesota School Boards Association, to support Senate File 2422-2593, and I want to get Senator Lynch's 2811 for the children of Minnesota. We need your help, members, to make this happen. And truly, imagine an education K-12 fund that would grow on its own without any additional taxpayer burden. Truly a lovely thing.
So do you have some other questions? Yes, Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Schwab, thank you. The chart that showed the distribution of funds at the various states from their trust fund, you've got a number of states that are $90, $100 million annual distributions. I assume that's annual. Do you have any idea what the percentage of the total funding for education is coming from the trusts in some of these states? I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I just didn't know if you knew offhand. Are some states mostly funding their education costs from the trust, or do you know that? I'm just curious.
I can't give you exact numbers. I can tell you if they're probably gold stars in the school trust fund area. It might be Arizona and how they've been able to develop their land. And Texas, of all things, really has done a great job because they've had oil on their school trust fund lands and have been able to truly assist their schools going forward.
Madam Chair. Thank you. And just to clarify, the you mentioned that currently there's about $635 million in trust. What is the annual, again, the annual amount that's being generated by that $600 million of asset base?
And to that point, Senator Hahn, maybe I should pass these out. We have an endowment and permanent school fund spreadsheet right here. And as you're waiting to get those, what I see here, and maybe Mr. Nauman, would you like to speak to this specifically?
Yes, Madam Chair and members, has this been this document been passed
it's
out?
It's being passed out right now.
Okay, this is the page from the November forecast consolidated fund statement that if you're bored some night, you want to crawl through. It's got about 150 pages of all the various funds in it. This is just one. I thought it'd be easier just to look at the one. And the line, I think, that answers Senator Hahn's question is the education aids line under actual and estimated uses. Those are the amounts that the fund spins off. And the fund is the permanent school fund is managed by the State Board of Investment. So the resources that that you see on that line are effectively the interest and dividends that go directly to the schools. And then, of course, I think it's already been established that there's then a subtraction in general education aids in a similar amount. So that's the amount of the subtraction, and that's the amount of the amount of revenue that's going directly to schools.
Senator Hahn.
Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Hahn. Just to make sure I understand, so if we're saying, for example, in the first fiscal year 2008, that's sort of in the middle of the column there, we're showing $608,000 of, I guess that wouldn't be, is the total, the 666, is that the total value of the asset?
Madam Chair, Senator Hahn, that would be the estimated, or the forecasted value for fiscal year 2008. Of course, we're still in the middle of that fiscal year, so it's an estimate of how much the permanent school fund resources will be valued at the end of the year.
Okay, and then, Madam Chair and Mr. Nauman, then the education aids under that same column is $27,353. So we're generating about $27 million out of an asset base of 600 and whatever million. That's about, what, 4%?
Mm-hmm. Sounds about right.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And just to clarify then, those dollars do not go directly to schools but are taken off of the general fund allocation to schools. So very good.
Madam Chair.
Okay. And Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is new to me, so I'm trying to understand it. So, Madam Chair, Mr. Nauman, the amount, the 4% amount, it goes to our school funding, but then an amount equal to that is subtracted from what the state would pay and put into the general fund because it's assumed that this is an extra, it's just supplanting?
Madam Chair, Senator Bonoff, I think you've got it pretty close. In terms of the answer of why we do it, it goes back to 1971. I was able to find it in the so-called Minnesota Miracle Bill. I've gone back to some of the staff that we usually turn to that have these kinds of recollections. And I've got a variety of stories as to why, and it's all speculation. I haven't gotten a firm answer yet. And I even spoke to Mr. Melcher this morning, and he said, I'm guessing myself, because it precedes him. Some of the operating theories are perhaps school districts, the state wanted at the time to have school districts receive money on the same pupil base, weighted pupils were introduced in the, I believe it was in the Minnesota Miracle Bill. And so you would have one system where we would be providing state aids based on weighted pupils, and then another system where the dollars would be sent out on unweighted. Okay. And that's perhaps a confusing type of mechanism. It's still confusing today. So it's possible that that's why we made the subtraction, so that then all the dollars would go out on the same pupil base. Of course, we've moved way beyond that. Now we have three or four different pupil bases for a variety of different education aids. I'm probably making this more complicated than your question was trying to get at, but the bottom line is it also created some budget savings, and some people have speculated that perhaps we were trying to achieve some budget savings at the same time that the Minnesota Miracle was occurring. Most of the senior staff that I've spoken to seem to uniformly suggest they probably don't think that was the effort that was going on at that time.
And Senator Olson. Senator Bonner, are you done? Senator Olson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Regier, the intent here, this isn't going to just create a $29 million hole. That money is going to education now. Is your objective to separate it out so it's more clearly understood what we're getting from this fund, and then designating it to one of the categories of that we normally fund with general fund money?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I believe there would be tails on this for the effective date in the next biennium, because the money under the proposal would stay in education, not pass through to the general fund. Accordingly, in the future, on effective date, those funds that escape through the schools would have to be made up. Mm-hmm. But we're trying to defend the integrity of the constitutional intent and what I think should be the statutory obligation to the schools through the directive given.
So, Madam Chair, Senator Wieger, based on how it's been rolled in and going out per pupil, it will be distributed on a different basis to schools. I think, are you designating or looking to possibly dedicate it for technology?
Senator Wieger.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, there's a couple of options in terms of how it would be. One, in the first bill, it would just go to the district, and that would be on the ADM, average daily membership formula. It's not weighted or any other factors. It's just the straight distribution that way. The second bill would state that it would be for technology purposes as outlined. So a couple of options, choices to consider.
But Madam Chair and Senator Wieger, if it were going out by ADM, essentially that's the way. If the money technically went into the formula and it was going by ADM, this really wouldn't. It'd just be a different way of designating the same money without necessarily taking away from it the total amount that each school would receive. Depending on how you distribute it in relation to what we do now.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, Senator Olson, right now it's acknowledged, but then it is taken out. It would not be taken out under this proposal.
On that point, I think that one of the things that struck me when we were touring and learning more about this fund was in looking what other states do, that we don't even notice how much this fund is generating. It sort of disappears. We set a budget, and then we don't even follow this. And to have it as a separate fund, to have it as a separate allocation, it's being watched more closely in that there's an incentive to make sure that it's performing well and manageable. And that was what struck me, is that it has greater visibility because it is something that has a long tradition here in Minnesota.
Well, Madam Chair, I agree with that. But it doesn't necessarily mean that it's more money. If the income was going into the general fund, but that amount was also being used for schools, it was a part of that school package, we're just going to say, no, we're not going to feed it through the general fund. It's going to stay with education. But technically, that plus what comes out of the general fund would remain the same. I mean, I'm not against backfilling with more general fund money as a result of it, but technically it wouldn't necessarily have to happen. But I think that greater visibility would help us to monitor that we are getting good return on the investments, and that the income is that the lands are being managed well. Pay more attention to that to be sure that there is revenue that continues to flow into the corpus of the fund.
Okay, Ms. And Senator Erickson-Ropes. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Wieger and Ms. Schwab. Just again, so I'm trying to get my mind around this too. This is a new concept for me as well. When the money flows through the education account into the general fund, and we're talking about now keeping it in education, does that mean that in the past we've been using this money in the general fund and it's going to be coming away from, we're going to be actually deducting money from other appropriations?
Well, perhaps if you think about the MFET, I don't know if this is equivalent, but the dollars were going into the general fund and they were pulled out. Mm-hmm. And so is that an accurate analysis or sort of a good comparison that these dollars were going into the general fund to subsidize the general fund commitment? This would be pulling them out into a separate fund, which we'll then have discussion on. Could they be dedicated to something very specific, which is what several other states are doing? And so that the federal lands are funding something very specific that may otherwise not have been funded?
But
maybe another way of looking
Madam
at it.
Chair,
Senator Olson?
If I'm not mistaken, MVEST funds that were going into the general fund could be spent on anything and were being spent on anything and not necessarily anything mm-hmm. transportation related. But I think there is a requirement of the permanent school trust fund income, even if it goes into the general fund, that's got to be spent on education.
Mr. Nauman.
And that it has been over the years.
Madam Chair and members, yes, under the Constitution that the dollars that come off the trust fund have to be spent on education.
Yeah.
You as a legislature can make decisions on what color of education money that gets spent on, but you can make that decision. But it doesn't have to be education. I think it might be helpful to return to Senator Wieger's chart just to talk through how the flow of dollars works, because I think it's a nice visual. If you consider that first box up in the top left-hand corner as the land, and any revenue that comes from that land, either selling the land or from the natural resources, by constitution has to be deposited in the permanent school trust fund, which is then managed by the State Board of Investment. Any interest that comes off of that is required to go to the districts. And Senator Olson, that's what we were just talking about. It's school districts. It's not charters. It's districts. Districts also receive money from the general fund. And then under current law, beginning in 1971, we began a subtraction. And that subtraction is the equal amount of revenue that comes off the permanent school fund. So a dollar comes in from the permanent school fund, and one of the things that guys like me, when you guys make your decisions on what the K-12 bill should look like, we run back and we make that subtraction. We pull that $25 million off. And it's built into the forecast, so it's not a new transaction, but it's one of the various transactions that have to be made before we create a single appropriation that you see in the bill when you're up on the floor.
Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Nauman, looking back at this chart then, when we have the repealer, what does the repealer do to this chart?
Well, I thought Senator Wieger's visual was appropriate. Takes the scissors and cuts that part off, and then so the $25 million or so dollars that go in, there is no money coming out. You have $25 million roughly more revenue in the system. Now, Senator Olson's point I think is also valid, right. And there's lots of ways to think about this, but if the general fund has a $25 million additional expenditure by virtue of there not being a subtraction anymore, that's $25 million theoretically less that you would have available to you that you could hypothetically put on the formula allowance.
And that's minus 25.
But it might result in more money. If, for example, the permanent school trust fund lands have a big infusion, they get a lot more taconite, or I'm not the expert in this area. I'm sure the DNR folks will correct me if I get this wrong. But if that generates more money and goes into the trust fund and generates additional resources, which then in turn slough off interest to the schools, maybe it will be more money.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, if I recall right, on the day that we spent in the mines, that not only is there some 40-acre parcels that they monitor very carefully, that the taconite that comes out of that goes into the fund, but there's some parcels that are in the lands that will be contributing to this new steel plant. So I think that there is a potential for more income out of the mining endeavor for this fund as well.
Madam Chair?
That's where the money is.
And Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Wieger, so your bill says that rather than have this money go into the general fund to supplant it, that in fact that money would stay in public education, and so it would create a hole in the general fund in some respect, but perhaps that's the right thing to do, like MBEST was the right thing to do, that's consistent with the intent of doing the trust in the first place. Is that what I'm understanding?
Madam Chair, Senator Bonhoff, by and large, but education should not feel they're to blame for doing what's correct, for doing what the integrity in the constitutional intent was. To the extent that it affects other programs, so be it. But when you put the budget together, you should acknowledge what are the obligations first. That's up to the legislature how it wants to fund other programs, but this should be included.
Madam Chair, and just follow on. Senator Wieger, I agree with you. I suspect there might be some kind of a battle over that with other members from other committees, but it does seem consistent with the intent.
Yes.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm not sure if you can answer my question. I see we have some of our friends from the DNR here. Maybe they know. But I'm just looking at the chart here, and you've got originally two sections out of every township were set aside. If I do the math, that's about 5.5% of the total land area of the state was originally in trust fund land. And 150 years ago when this all happened, was there an evaluation made of the value of that trust? And my question is, how has the performance of that value been over the last 150 years as it's been managed by the state?
Would you like to have that answer now, Senator Wieger, or would the DNR like to come up and discuss that, or wait until we have this testimony?
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Hand, if I could suggest that when we get to Senator Lynch's bill and we talk more about the lands itself and the management and valuation, et cetera, that might be a ripe time for pursuing that.
Okay. All right,
my next witness, if we could, Dr. Don Langan, International Falls.
Welcome, Dr. Langan. Thank you for your trip down to St. Paul for this important legislation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Don Langan, Superintendent of Schools, International Falls, ISD 361. As the first testifier pointed out, Coochaching County has significant numbers of trust fund acres. So I suppose in some respects, ISD 361 is serving as a steward for the stewards. So, and we take that role very seriously. I'd just like to share with the committee, if I may, how as a superintendent we look at school trust fund revenues that come to us. In this business, we have a phrase called revenue neutral, which everybody uses, but I think is a great way to cover any host of ambiguities. What it amounts to is that in ISD 361, we receive about 43 we are acknowledged to receive about $43,000 in endowment fund, school trust land revenues. We also have Source 211, state aids. The state aids are put in as revenue in my budget. The $43,000 is not. In other words, the state aid that I'm recognizing is state aid less that $43,000. In some respect, what that amounts to, and I heard the words supplement and supplant. As a school superintendent, we're very used to those terms, particularly when it comes to anything federally legislated, your title programs. Title programs are used to supplement educational programs for kids. They, by law, cannot be used to supplant those programs. In other words, I have a maintenance of effort and I have all those kinds of considerations. In reality, what happens is if I'm given, say, $30 a pupil unit endowment credit and I get a state aid gen ed formula, that gen ed aid formula does not recognize that $30. I don't get it. Then the question comes up, who is supplementing and who is supplanting? In many respects, I could make the argument that when the constitutional action occurred, that was the budget and everything else is supplementing. So I could probably make the argument, as specious as it may sound, that the gen ed formula is on the books right now to supplement the endowment fund the state put in 150 years ago. I could make that argument.
I think they expected that it was going to.
So in terms of what Senator Wiegert's bill could do for International Falls Public Schools, the long and the short of it, in fiscal 09, I'd have $43,000 more revenue than I had in fiscal 08. That's as I understand the bill. The bucket, the hole in the bucket got a plug in it. In terms of the utilization of those dollars, would it make sense to go and place those dollars into technology? Of course it would. Could we put those dollars in addition to what you as public policymakers gave us a year or two ago in deferred maintenance? Of course we could. I guess that I'm not that proud. I don't really care where and how you put it as long as it gets put and stays. I think that's to the chase. The last couple of years, I've been fortunate to serve on your state trust board. Superintendent of South Washington County is the urban representative, and they
needed Patty Phillips from Maplewood, I believe, is
Maplewood,
the,
that's yes. Correct.
Excuse me.
Patty is the urban representative, and you needed a non-urban representative. And I guess I'm about as non-urban as you're going to get. But in the actions of that committee, we meet a couple of times a year. Our actions are primarily due to consider issues of land exchange. And I think that we do as good a job there as we can. But I think that to presume that that current committee and its structure is providing an administrative management oversight to the, in the conducting the affairs of the trust fund, I don't think that that would be a correct assumption, and I believe that is one thing under your deliberation at a later time. Last point.
Senator Olson has a question for you.
Okay.
You.
Yeah.
Madam
Senator
Chair and Superintendent Langan, do you think when you talked about most of your actions are land exchange, can you exchange some more and get some more of that mining land?
I would always take that into consideration, Senator Olson. You know that.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. The school trust lands have a history of great tradition in this country, and I think along with that goes the horrible burden of stewardship with the intent in which they were awarded. And the integrity of the vision of school trust land and its mission and operation are the kids of this state. The more direct we can make that link, the better we're going to fulfill that constitutional integrity and the mission to which they were established.
Thank you very much. Are there questions? Senator Olsen.
On this map that we have, did somebody stick a post-it note up here or something? Or what's the explanation of how it cuts off so dramatically and then it comes back? Is that the way it actually is, or was that a piece of paper laying on there when they copied it?
Madam Chair. Senator Stump may have an answer for us.
I'm just guessing, but I think that is the Red Lake Reservation, which is they have aboriginal rights. So in other words, that land actually was in their hands before the government was formed. So, and there's some speckles in there because they don't have, section of it was pure, and I think is almost pure. And then there's a bunch of little pieces or small plots of land that somehow got into private ownership. And I'm not sure exactly how, but that whole chunk there is considered in our Red Lake Reservation.
Thank you.
And it goes all the way up to the northwest angle, which is that peak up there, and comes down. That line on the southwest, the southwest side of that posted note, that is called the Treaty of 1863 or 1868. And that's when Chief Mustang made a treaty with the federal government to sell off, I think it was about 18 million acres of land to the federal government. And that established that line. And if you look on a Minnesota map, and you find Thief River Falls and Highway 59 coming out of Thief River Falls, that Highway 59 comes at a slant from northwest to southeast, and that follows fairly closely to that line on the reservation. It's not reservation now, but it's the old treaty line, fairly closely for quite a stretch of way.
Thank you.
An excellent history lesson, Senator Stump. Thank you. Thank you. Are there any other questions, Senator Hahn?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Superintendent Langan and maybe Grace Schwab, I don't know, you may know too, but you mentioned in your testimony that your district has about $43,000 when you look at your receipts that is coming from the trust lands. Is that does every district show a dollar amount coming into their district that is trust land related?
I believe that, Senator Hahn, I believe that every district's fiscal printout would show an endowment. Those that qualify, and right now I know of none that don't qualify for some recognition for trust lands, but it would show up, as I understand, in all of their fiscals as endowment fund. So there would be a dollar amount there.
Okay. And Madam Chair, Ms. Schwab, just to that question, that was, is there any exclusion, I mean, currently from receipt of the trust funds? Or I guess my understanding was that the money was going to be allocated in the same way other education dollars are currently allocated, so that every school district, I just was curious. I did not know that there was a separate accounting for the income that was attributed to trust fund land, and I guess it would be interesting to, maybe we could ask Mr. Nauman to see if we can.
Standing Senator Hahn, that the appropriations are by pupil units or ADM, I'm not sure which. I know that when I do all my annual audit, my external audit, we have to be extremely careful with two items. I believe it's endowment and county apportionment, that we do not recognize those numbers as revenue because they're not. And I think a lot of young superintendents, myself included, I think I did add those for a couple of years until I learned that, no, that's not real money.
So just one more question I have is that of the, on this spreadsheet here, where there is $27 million in interest, does the DNR is there a service charge that is taken off of this by the DNR to
right there, next line.
The next line? Okay. So of say if we look at fiscal year 08, the $27,353, $218,000 goes to the DNR to administer the fund. Would that be correct, Mr. Nauman?
Madam Chair, I think that would be a fair reading. I trust the DNR will correct me if I get this one wrong. That's sort of out of my area of expertise. But I'm not sure exactly how much they do, but I know that before the money goes into the trust fund that some amount of management fees are used by the DNR.
But, Madam Chair, there's another line,
Center Olson.
Transfers to other funds. There's another $1.8 million and $4.1 million. What's that for?
So Mr. Nauman?
Madam Chair, this is where I kind of wish Mr. Mueller were here to help me out.
Okay.
This is beyond my area of expertise. So
okay.
I know where I was able to match the education aids amounts up to the tracking that I show. So I'm comfortable with that number. And I trust that Senator Chaudhry's committee might have an interest in this as well.
So, Madam Chair?
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, Senator Wieger, the only number that you're cutting off relates to the one that's the 20, or 2007 was the 24.5 or 0.6 million?
Yes.
And nothing changes about the other siphons that are in there pulling some money out of there?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, you know, not at this point. There's some other ramifications in Senator Lynch's bill in terms of oversight and some recommendations that might come forward, but until we have further dialogue with the Finance Committee divisions, and that's the proposal I have at this point.
Thank you. Okay, Madam Ms. Ciccone.
Madam Chair, members, Mary Ciccone from Parents United for Public Schools, and I just want to thank first Ms. Schwab and also Senator Wieger for bringing this bill forward. I find it really exciting, and maybe it's just because I'm wishfully thinking that this is going to supplement, not supplant,
right.
dollars going to education, which would be wonderful, especially with the hope of the improved oversight, which comes with Senator Lynch's bill. But I do implore you to consider carefully defining it specifically for any one issue at this moment. I have a cautionary tale that actually Madam Chair may remember. In the mid-90s, schools were given dollars from the legislature appropriated that needed to be specifically used for technology. As a parent in Stillwater, what was purchased were large monitors, but there was no money in which to actually do the staff development and to actually use those monitors. So those monitors hung in our buildings for 2 to 3 years black. And it became a PR nightmare, one going out for bond referendums or levies to try and explain why we needed money when we were sitting with these massive monitors. And to try and explain it was use it or lose it money, it was specifically for technology, and really we couldn't do anything else with it, was just hideous. So please, I do have a bit of a compromise idea, which is to pass the legislation, of course, to gain more money for schools, but also to work on the improving of the oversight and then taking a look at what the improvement of that oversight actually does to the potential of the dollars and then carve it out at one point, knowing exactly how much you expect it to come in the future, and at that time hopefully stabilize the rest of the funding formula. So we're absolutely supportive of anything that can bring more dollars to schools, but I don't think anyone in here believes that schools have too much money, and the last levies brought us in some really, we're in some serious cutting modes throughout the state, and my fear is any dollar amount, this amount to at this point, it looks about $27 per pupil, that could mean life or death to a lot of school districts in their cuts. So I just implore you to think very carefully about designating it at this particular moment in this legislation. Thank you.
Senator Erickson-Ropes and then Senator Torres-Wright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Scone, I think you have a school board member history, and Ms. Schwab also, of course, represents the School Boards Association. What's your feeling about the carve-outs? Because I know that sometimes, you know, the messages we get are just, you know, allow the local school board to make those decisions on a local level, the whole local control issue. And then other times, you know, they're wanting particular money for designated projects. So where are you landing, you know, on this particular issue?
I think it's very important for a school board, a locally elected board, to be able to make this determination. But I also believe that it's important for the board to explain this amount of money came to us from the state. And I believe it's perfectly appropriate to make that known, that $27 million was now new money into schools. But as a school board member, I would have to explain exactly how I used that money. And I think that's actually the appropriate use of a local school board. We got this amount of money. That meant this amount to such and such district. And this is precisely how we used it. If the money's ongoing, I could put a plan in shape, too, to talk about how its use would be used year after year.
Madam Chairman, I think the best thing we can do, and I hope I encourage you, both these bills show wonderful things that can happen for schools. The key point I want to leave you with is that by putting these dollars into education, these have the potential to grow, and it's really that growth that I want to catch. But if in your wisdom you decide the best way to go technology, I can promise you my school districts across the state would be thrilled. If it's deferred maintenance, as Superintendent Longreen gave us, that's a wonderful use. We know we have many needs that way. Or if, in fact, it's on the general fund, growth would be so spectacular to have actually a source of money that could grow and make money without taxing the taxpayers. I don't want to say we're not fussy, but please give us everything you've got to try and make that transfer into education so we can capture the growth. So that would be first and foremost. My local boards like local decision-making best, but this is one of those special chances that come along every lifetime, and I think if we could really make this happen, this would be good news to a lot of board members' ears.
Follow-up question, Madam Chair. I have mixed feelings about designated funds because as a former school board member myself, you know, it's nice to make those decisions at a local level if you have one need that's greater than another. But I'm worried, you know, if this is appearing to be extra money given to school districts and it's not designated, that somehow there's going to be a commensurate amount of less money, you know, that gets designated for general fund education dollars the next budget go around.
And that's, I think, to Senator Wieger's point in the beginning, was that we heard that some states you apply through a grant process, and it may be a number of different things that you could apply for, but that you're able to show the public what did you use these dollars for. But that's additional paperwork, additional, a process. And having it earmarked, you know, specifically for these areas in Senate File 2392 really targets it. So I think that there is some different issue here. To Senator Torres-Wray.
Madam Chair, I just would like some clarification. It seems like we're talking about both 2422 and 2392 at the same time. And I thought we were right now having a discussion only about Senate File 2422 and get a vote, or are we going to decide on both? I'm just a little confused as to how do we do this, because I have happened to think that I'm totally in agreement with 2422, but I have a series of questions about 2392, but I don't know if we're doing both right now, so I'm kind of confused.
Right. We will vote on both of them a different time, but I think right now the testimony is on 2422, but some of the discussion has been, if we do this, how would the money be designated? So I think there's been some discussion ahead of time to address the issues of, if it is no longer subtracted, how would the dollars be potentially allocated, which might help people decide how they feel about Senate File 2422. I'm speaking for others. I think we've kind of jumped ahead, but to just give some clarification of what might happen if 2422 is implemented.
Madam Chair, then Senate, a clarification. Reagan. If we pass 2422, it doesn't necessarily mean that we have to have a change on designating how the funding is going to be used. That could go independently. So is that correct, Senator Wigger?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And this bill will have to go on to other committees as well. So just so you know. And Senator Bonoff?
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the things I'm excited about with regard to the technology side of things is I have been working in the interim with a technology task force that is made up of stakeholders from all over the state, as well as people from the Department of Education, and working with Representative Winkler on surveying our school districts to find out what technology the school districts have, putting forward standards on what technology we believe all districts should have, and then laying out a plan that would be, you know, a several-year vision. And so I look, and we know that once we bring this forward, the next question is going to be, how would we ever fund this? So it occurs to me as I hear this approach that that would be a wonderful complement. And I think actually Representative Winkler is working on it with Representative Dietrich as a package as well. So I just raise that as something to explore down the road.
Is Madam Chair, members, it was just intended to provide another option, and I think there's general support for the subtraction, and then local control would decide how it would be spent. The idea behind the technology allocation would be to put more of a face on it so that the public had a better understanding, and that's what a lot of other states have done. They've tried to assign it to some type of program, but you know, through the legislative journey, we could have further discussions if you wanted to keep that option open. And I have had suggestions, early childhood, achievement gap, et cetera, for areas it might go toward. But technology seemed to be a common theme. But I'm mostly concerned about the first bill getting through. But the second one provided an option, and if you wanted to have a dual track for consideration, as it would be a finance issue ultimately.
Madam Chair.
And Senator Olson. No.
Madam Chair, and Senator Wiener, you know, and others, that the second bill has the same language as the first bill, the repealer part, but just has that designation. Even though I'm a co-author on the second bill, I'm not uncomfortable with the notion of not specifying, but I think it is important, whether we have to tell them to do it or not, that they publicize what they chose to use these funds for. I think it's an opportunity to let them know that this is a priority in our district and this is what we use them for. Everybody's got the technology need, so it wouldn't be surprising if that's where it went, but there may be some other things that may be more important at that time. So I have no problem with the greater flexibility in that. If you want to send, I presume both of these have to go on to the budget division.
Yes.
And I'm sure we'll get some more attention there.
Very good. Is there anyone else here to testify on Senate File 2422? Okay,
Senator Hanham.
Senator Hanham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have just one further question for Mr. Nauman. I'm at your printout that you gave us. The receipts section, you show two major areas, departmental earnings and investment income. The difference between those are, I guess I'm assuming that one of them is the proceeds from the that is generated by the land asset itself, but and then the other is something else. But I'm not quite sure what that something else is. And but the do you have any information on what that is?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hand, we'll make sure that we get that distinction for the finance division. But okay. I think I'm fairly certain that the investment income is going to be the money generated off the permanent school fund. But we'll make sure for the finance division.
Madam Chair,
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, we do have some folks from DNR sitting here. I think they could answer that. I suspect it's the income coming from the forestry and the mining and so on versus the money that's the interest on the corpus that's been invested. But there is money going in every year, and I think of that last year. I think of that $23 million over or $24 million. It was over half. Could someone respond to that? What portion of that was mining versus forestry, or is it encompassed land sales too, or land exchanges?
Marty.
Madam Chair and our DNR folks, I presume you came prepared to answer questions, not just to watch what we're doing.
So with this is Mr. Vadnais from the DNR, who did a wonderful job of introducing all of us to the School Trust Land Program. Welcome, Mr. Vadnais. Thank you for being here today.
Madam Chair, thank you. I'm Marty Vadnais, and I'm the Director of the Lands and Minerals Division of DNR. And I believe the question is on the spreadsheet, and we didn't put this together, but I think that that's accurate. It's reflecting both the what it's called departmental earnings, so that's the amount that was generated from the land management activities, the royalties from mining and timber sales and so forth. And the investment income would be the amount that the State Board of Investments generated from the corpus of the investment. And I don't have the exact numbers with me, but I believe that the mineral income for the year that's shown here, if my memory is right, was around $13 million, $14 million, something like that. Just over half of the income was from mineral receipts. And if you'd like, I can, of course, give a much better detailed breakdown of where all that income came from land sales and leases and that sort of thing, if you'd like, in the future.
Right. And if I remember, Mr. Vadnais, wasn't the increase over the past few years basically the mineral rights?
Madam Chair, I believe it varies somewhat over the past. I think timber receipts were really quite good for the last few years, although most recently timber stumpage prices are down. And at the same time, there's kind of a corresponding increase in the amount of mineral income because iron ore taconite is really very, very good right now. And so the value of that continues to rise, plus the amount of trust fund ore that's mined has increased in the past few years. So it's kind of a combination of things that are going on.
Madam Chair, thank you for coming back and talking to us and helping us to remember how this all works. But is the management of this fund, is there a percentage of the revenues that are generated that is then passed on to the school fund? Or, I mean, you know what I'm saying? How much of it is that a calculation that is fixed, that it's going to be 4% of the amount generated is going to be dispersed and the remaining 96 retained to grow the fund itself? Or is there anything hard and fast on that, or is it all just a question of what the board wants to do?
Madam Chair, Senator Hahn, I probably am not the best one to speak about how the fund is administered once money goes into the corpus, because that responsibility really is the State Board of Investment that does the actual investment of it, of the corpus, and distributes the revenue by law from that activity that they do. And I think it's my understanding that the amount of increase in the corpus really is then that income that's used to distribute to school districts. And I don't know that there's a formula. I think it's based more on what the return is year to year on how it performs. And I think it's been mentioned other states. that it really does vary state to state on what that performance is, and there are some states like Texas that returned 12%, but they invested in real estate speculation, for example. And I think that the State Board of Investments in Minnesota takes somewhat more of a conservative approach than investing in, say, real estate transactions.
Madam Chair, we'll have a very good opportunity on Senator Lynch's bill
to talk
pursue
about
that line of inquiry. And if I may, I'd like to move the first bill, and then I'm going to ask Senator Stumpf after that vote for guidance as to whether we should advance the second bill for additional flexibility. So, Madam Chair, I move that Senate File 2422 be recommended to pass and referred to Finance Committee.
Finance Commission. Okay. Senator Wieger has moved Senate File 2422 to be advanced to the Finance Committee. Is there additional discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And opposed, same sign. And Senate File 2422, the motion passes.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, if I could ask Senator Stumpf, I believe was an author on some of this legislation in the early 80s. As I recall, and you provided a great historical context earlier on the map. But your advice as to whether we might focus on technology or include that in the mix?
Madam Chair and Senator Wieger, it wouldn't hurt. I think the idea, obviously, there's a couple different ideas. I think the core is in the Senate File 2422, but I mean, as far as keeping ideas alive, you could amend that one in committee too, but it gives, I think, the committee members a chance to see both of them and have the discussion all over again. And there's a number of Finance Division members here too, but
okay, thank you, Senator Stumpf. Madam Chair, I move that Senate File 2392 be recommended to pass and referred to Finance.
All right, Senator Wieger has moved Senate File 2392 to be moved to the Finance Committee. Is there any more discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. And the motion passes. Senate File 2392 will be moved to the Finance Committee. All right.
Thanks,
you want to go to Senator Lynch? With Senate File 2811, the Permanent School Trust Fund Accountability and Oversight legislation.
Madam Chair, I come today with...
And welcome, Senator.
Thank you. Senate File 2811, and Madam Chair, if I could begin with, I have a delete all amendment.
All right.
That's SCA 5896-1.
And I believe we have that in our packet already.
And that amendment would put the bill in the proper form for our discussion today.
And could you move the mic a little closer? Thank you.
Yes.
We just like to hear you. Very good. Please proceed. I think we have the amendment already.
Can I have a motion to move my adoption of my amendment?
There is a motion to move Amendment 1, a delete all amendment, number 5896-1. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign, and the motion passes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before I begin, I want to let the members know that there's been much work and discussion done in this committee and frankly, outside of this committee surrounding this issue over the last several months. And I'm particularly appreciative to the chair for putting this item on the agenda of this committee to do some work in. And I'd also like to acknowledge and thank Representative Dietrich. I saw her here in the audience earlier. And we have been working together jointly to pull this bill together. So just would like to make that acknowledgement. This bill does two or three things. And as has been alluded to in some of our discussions today and previous to this, There has been some desire to strengthen the authority and the accountability and the charge surrounding public school trust fund lands. And we, to begin with, we took a look at what existing statute provides and chose to try to work from there. Mr. Nauman has been an outstanding resource in this effort, and in Subdivision 18, which is line 1.5, that's permanent school fund authority and designee. One of the things, frankly, that I think we learned in our travels and experienced was there were certainly lots of questions about this little hidden jewel, if you will, in the permanent school trust fund lands. And frankly, there's a significant amount of resources that we have in this area, $635 million in the fund itself, and revenue distributions in the area of $22 million. So no small matter, to be sure. So we are seeking to provide some more direct authority. This will continue to fall under the Commissioner of Natural Resources, but I think that you will see there that there is certainly a point person, if you will, a go-to person with regard to permanent school trust fund lands. Repeatedly, when we were on our field trips and in our discussions to this point, frankly, it's at times been a little frustrating in trying to take a look at the oversight and the accountability here and really who is the person or the department that we go to with questions on what are we doing with minerals or should we be doing more with forestry or what have you. I'll move on to the next section, which is line 1.17, and that's the advisory committee. I inferred that we took a look at this, the current statute, and there is an advisory committee currently. In talking with some of the members of that advisory committee, based on the questions and things that we learned on our field trips and working with Representative Dietrich, we were seeking to bolster that advisory committee. That is not to create another commission or task force, but rather to make sure that the advisory committee has a clear charge and has membership that can support that charge. I'm not going to go through the specific membership at this particular time, but would rather spend my time and draw your attention to lines 2.15 on the second page. And part of this, I'll be very honest, another thing that we took into consideration, serious consideration when we were doing this, is with your support, this bill will have the opportunity to make its way to the State and Local Government Committee. And the chair has graciously put forward some guidelines and suggestions in terms of advisory councils and committees, and we were trying to be cognizant of some of those things. So there are four very specific things that this bolstered advisory committee will be charged with, and it includes lines 2.15, improve the efficiency of the Department of Natural Resources management of school trust fund lands. 2.17 addresses the expenditures associated with that. 2.19 talks about land exchanges, land sales, and leasing. And 2.21, I think, is perhaps the most important. And 2.21 clearly says that we need to manage the school trust lands to maximize the long-term economic return for the permanent school trust fund. And if this bill does anything, I hope that it seeks to make it exceedingly clear that while there's always a balance between natural resources and revenue generation, for the purposes of this advisory committee, the purpose, the bottom line, is the solvency and the maximization of the permanent school trust fund. And I don't know if Mr. Nauman has anything that he'd like to add in terms of the bill language.
Maybe a question. I mean, I can walk through the operative sections of the bill if that's your
questions.
Pleasure. But
well, you know, I think what you're trying to say here, Senator Lynch, and I commend you for this, is that we're trying to squeeze every dollar out of this land where we felt maybe there was opportunity for growth and for greater income to be able to do that. And a good example is when we were in the Boundary Waters area. And Senator Olson and I walked to the top of a very large hill, mountain, cliff, whatever. And but that land is protected as part of, you know, a wilderness area. So how can we generate income? So are there ways to exchange those lands, which may be easier said than done? But, you know, for those of you who didn't take the tour to see some of these lands, which are some swamplands, by the way, is how those lands can be exchanged and how to do that in a more expeditious manner. So I think that this is providing some support to the DNR to be able to make sure that the people who might have some of these ideas in terms of better land management might be able to be part of that fund. Senator Jungbauer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Lynch, I guess when I read it, I read something different here. I'm reading that we must assume there's some screw-ups. So if you could tell me where we're goofing up now. And on the other end, in order to expedite things, I mean, I come from a church background, part-time pastor, and we always say if you really want to goof something up, then just add a bigger committee to it, and it just seems like that's what you're doing. So having sat down with the DNR many times in my first two terms and talked to them about these issues, you know, we've got them in the office, and we've grilled them about what do they know about different ways to come up with mining ideas, if they're aware of all these different mapping techniques and things, and just had them in again, I think, last week. I brought in one of my geologists and hydrogeologist buddies to talk about the school trust lands. And I really quiz them on this, and that is my background, to know if there's ways to identify properties and the exchanges and stuff. I mean, we can always talk more about that. That might be the only opening I see as viable. How could we exchange them for something? But I can honestly say I have criticized the DNR on many occasions for many things, and this is not one of the items that I find fault with the DNR. So I guess before I'm willing to move anything like this, I'd like to see where the faults are and why we would create a bigger bureaucracy in order to try to take care of some faults rather than direct it internally, because I think they're doing a pretty darn good job and got a pretty good return for those swamplands that we have.
Senator Lynch.
Okay, Madam Chair, Senator, thank you for the question. First, let me just reiterate that this bill is really about maximizing the permanent school trust fund. This bill is really not a bill about the Department of Natural Resources or the commissioner. It's really about the permanent school trust fund lands. One of the reasons that this is coming forward is because of the potential, frankly, that I believe we saw that exists in these areas. And Senator Olson alluded to some new mining opportunities that are going to be happening in that region. And some of the calculations that have been prepared in response to that are phenomenal in terms of the potential revenue generation. When we were, for the last many, many several months, if you would ask who is the staff person responsible, who is the go-to person, who, whether it's on the revenues or the land exchanges, who's the go-to person, it's not clear. It's really not clear. And in talking with the advisory committee, this advisory committee has been in place for quite some time and had varying amounts of varying amounts of product that it's worked on or produced. But as you look at the advisory committee And if your charge is really in land management and financial land management and bolstering revenue-generating ideas for these lands, it might be suggested that maybe that advisory committee doesn't have the right makeup of the right people, the right components on there. And we were seeking to think about what might that look like? What kinds of expertise might you want to bring into that discussion?
Well, perhaps the private sector, as opposed to a board that currently is like public sector, to bring in some private sector expertise. Would that be a good suggestion?
Madam Senator Chair, Lynch? Thank you. In one of the sessions with Senator Wieger and Representative Dietrich and others in the room, I, of course, brought up the likeness to the Healthcare Access Commission, mostly because I probably see that in my sleep. But the Healthcare Access Commission is kind of designed that way as well, where there are a number of legislators on the commission, but there are any number of experts or stakeholders in the field.
Madam Chair?
Senator Olson, and then Senator Olson.
Thank you. I usually stuff everything in my folder, but I can't find the stuff from that last meeting when we got that chart. And Senator Jungbauer, this is what popped the red flags up for me. Because I thought, if I remember right, the income was like $46 million and the management fee was like $26 million. And so the net gain was only like $20 million.
Oh, no.
So if that's what we got, remember we had that chart, and I don't have that chart in front of me, but it was a dramatic difference. If you took away the gross income from the land minus the management fee, it was tremendous amount of management fee, I felt. So that's why I'm glad to see this, because it seemed to me the management fee was much higher than
So Madam Chair, to that point.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I guess you're suggesting, and maybe it's true or it's not true, that these numbers, that there's some money that comes off the top before it's reflected in the departmental earnings that actually go into the corpus?
Yes.
And that's not accounted for here? Is that what you're saying?
The chart The chart I was just handed showed, I think it was revenues of $28 million, and that was gross, and then net was 16.6. So that's what, 12 million difference? So that's what is that made up of? Is that $12 million for management fees then? I guess that's the question I have. It seems like that's like 40% of the money goes, is it for management or
school considered?
It seems like a lot of money to make if your net is 16 and your gross is 28. That's not a very good profit margin.
Are there any comments and any other questions? Mr. Meyer, from the DNR.
Madam Chair, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner with the Department of Natural Resources. The revenues Senator Olson is referring to deal with our forest certification costs. It's important for the committee to keep in mind, and I think you are well aware, that the mineral acres that we have, about 1 million acres of severed mineral rights, are much, much different in management and the way we have to manage them for productive return than our state lands that we own that are forested for the trust fund. About 50% of the state forest lands are trust fund lands, and they do require intensive management, thinning, reforestation. There's invasive species, pests that are there, also fire. So we're certifying our management costs against the trust fund before those revenues are deposited in the account. They also fluctuate depending on the actual cost of the year that took place. Last year we spent, as a state, over $25 million fighting fire. $2 million of those costs were certified against revenue from the trust because of the trust fund land, state land ownership issue. I think it would be good at some point in time, perhaps in the budget division, for us to discuss fully with the committee how those costs are certified and the activity that do take place. They are very labor-intensive, very costly. Gas. I mean, union employees in the forest doing work, forest stewardship activities, it does cost money. But we do hold as a number one priority of the state of Minnesota from the Department of Natural Resources perspective, besides the health and safety, is the fiduciary responsibilities that the commissioner holds. And trust fund land fiduciary responsibility is a big part of that responsibility that we have.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer.
So, Madam Chair?
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, Mr. Meyer is there. Just looking at what this bill does, the first part of it, I think, makes clear the authority of DNR in terms of this overall management and responsibility. But there's one thing in there that it says that it shall designate a permanent professional staff position whose duty shall be to accelerate the land exchanges, et cetera. How does what this proposes differ from how you function today, and what's your general response? Is this a good idea? Is this limiting? Is the amount of activity and work related to these lands sufficient to justify a permanent position for just that function? Could you just elaborate on this a bit,
Mr. Meyer?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I would love to. Thank you very much. First of all, I'd like to say thank you to Senator Lynch and Senator Wieger, and also Representative Dietrich for working with us on these issues as we move them forward. In looking at the language that you have before you in the new section on Subdivision 18, designating a permanent professional to do those activities, accelerate land exchanges, land sales, commercial leasing of school trust lands, and to manage trust lands to maximize a long-term economic return, you probably need more than one person to do that. What we would do in talking with the commissioner about this language is we would designate, most likely, people or a person from Lands and Minerals and a person in the Forestry Division to be that designated individual to make sure that they do have the expertise in not only the land management principles but also silviculture, mining, wetland recovery. There's a number of activities that are associated with the management of these lands. 60% of the trust fund lands that we own are wetlands. There's another 100,000 acres of trust lands that are tied up in the Boundary Waters Canoe area that we cannot manage at all. So we need to look at it that way. The other concern is having, if you see on 1.13, the permanent professional staff position shall also serve as a non-voting member of the Permanent School Advisory Committee and shall assist the committee with the preparation of the report required under Section 127A. To us, it's kind of, where are we crossing that line between executive and legislative branch? It was a question that we hope to bring up in the local government committee, but one that you should think about. And also going on to page 2 there, 2.2, this non-voting member shall provide the committee with professional advice, technical support on the issues of permanent school fund land management, being an employee of the commissioner yet reporting to the advisory committee. It's just that relationship issues that we need more clarification on. Looking at the members of the committee, though we do agree we need to have discussions with more people and try to figure out more entrepreneurial ways to manage these lands, looking for a person with expertise in forestry, expertise in mining and minerals, real estate development, renewable energy, we need to be very careful that we aren't causing any conflicts of interest. We have for the first time an individual pursuing a lease on state land for an anemometer, which is a tool that you use to gauge the wind. We need to make sure that when we do this, we aren't binding ourselves for the future. If this wind test turns positive, what happens to that land when he comes back or this individual comes back and wants to put up a turbine on that property? What about the revenues? Perhaps we should be able to get a cut, or there should be a percentage of that that goes directly to the permanent school fund, also the permanent university funds that are out there as well. Looking at those things, we just need to make sure that as we move forward, and I believe and I agree 100%, the ultimate goal lies on lines 2.21 to 2.22, manage the school trust lands to maximize a long-term economic return for the permanent school trust fund. We are all on the same page on that. So however we can come up to do that, we'd love to see it.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Hand.
Madam Chair.
Excuse me, Senator Olson has another question.
Yeah, because we were talking about something other. The other area that I wanted to point out, you are enlarging this considerably, the advisory committee. You're also making it the predominant number is the number of legislators on it. So there'll be 8 legislators and then 7 people involving the superintendents, the commissioner of education, and then and these area experts. And I think one ought to think about that. Right now you have 2 legislators versus the 3 out of a 5-person committee. There's no minority representation on it either among the legislators, but do we need that many? I presume state and local government will probably chew on that one pretty thoroughly. But I think the clerk, just as a plus, the clarification of the absolute authority, because apparently that is not in statute, maybe with a little greater flexibility than it just being a designated position, but that clearly the responsibility ought to show within within the personnel that you are using for toward that end, as well as the issues that that will give the focus of the what the committee's activity and reporting is are strong in this here.
Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair. Senator, currently there are four legislators on this advisory committee. It's the chairman of the Ways and Means, chairman of Finance, and both policy chairs.
Okay, I missed that.
And the desire in talking with some of the current advisory committee members and in trying to bring the appropriate divisions to the table, if you will, was the reason for the inclusion of K-12 budget and natural resources. So that was, I don't know if that helps you or not, but that was the kind of the how we got to that.
Okay.
But I'm appreciative of your comments, certainly.
Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Lynch, I just want to thank you for working on this because it seems like you're putting a lot of energy into the process. And whether or not particular individuals or how many are on this new advisory board, what I hear Senator Lynch working on is that she's trying to get all the stakeholders around the table, and I think that's an approach that many of us are trying to bring to our decision-making now, is hearing all the different perspectives from everyone who's going to be affected by the decision so we get some well-rounded decisions made. And, Mr. Miner, I'm not sure to what extent or not things have been happening in the past, but just as a process piece, I don't think it necessarily needs to reflect poorly on the DNR, but just a sense of this is how many of us like to make decisions on bringing many opinions to the table, sometimes very diverse opinions. And, until we have diversity of opinion, you don't get a chance really to wrestle with a lot of, where the direction is. And I particularly also appreciate trying to get the legislative intent nailed down here. That is something that both Senator Lynch and I experienced this last interim, when you can have a committee or the legislature come up with a bill and that we think is very clear in terms of legislative intent, and sometimes when it gets passed into a department, is the intent's lost. So there's always a natural struggle between how much detail you put into the bills and then how much flexibility you give the departments. But, Senator Lynch, I appreciate you trying to nail down some of the specifics here and make sure that, according to the handout we got earlier here, that we really do maintain undivided loyalty to the beneficiary and, the fact that people are on this committee to really bring that undivided loyalty to the table, I think, is a good thing. So thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Lynch.
I have, this has really been kind of my first opportunity to work with the department. You all know my committee assignments, and I don't frequent the DNR that often. But what I, if I had to summarize this bill, I would say that it is strengthening the communication between the department and the advisory committee. I think that's a real positive. I think that it gives some strength to the advisory committee and gives them a more specific charge, and gives all of us some comfort in knowing that if it is determined that there is further legislation that is needed to bolster these revenues, if there are legislative changes that need to happen, I believe that this is giving us the tools that we need to move forward on that, particularly in a time when I think there's some real growth potential in this area, and so it's my hope that we can get this squared away so that we are in a good position to move forward.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Lynch, as I worked in policy implementation for 18 years, I'm always very skeptical about language. And as I read the first two sentences, it says the Commissioner of Natural Resources has sole authority and responsibility for the administration of school fund. And to me, raises a concern because to say later on that the commissioner, you know, will be advice and all of this, is it your opinion that that becomes discretionary? Because if the mandate is that the commissioner will have sole authority, to me the issue of how you work with the board is relative. If I am in a commissioner's position, I believe that is a relative question because I will have sole authority. And so I would like to ask you, in terms of implementation, how does the advisory committee, the advisory committee's role actually gets strengthened by this language?
Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair, Senator Torres-Ray. Take a look at lines 1.13, and I wonder if it is through working with the permanent professional staff position shall also serve as a non-voting member of the permanent school advisory committee. So that is really aiming to tie those two more directly together. And at the end of the day, the responsibility has to lie somewhere. And currently, and even and with this bill, at the end of the day, the responsibility for the permanent school trust fund lies with the commissioner.
Madam Chair, follow-up clarification. So in reading the language, one could say the commissioner has the authority and responsibility, but I think it's the soul that is, for me, concerning, because as we assign legislatively this absolute responsibility, we don't monitor as well. In my previous experience, I just have had a hard time trying to figure out how the legislature actually monitor the actions of commissioners. Mm-hmm. And this is not to say anything about DNR in particular, but it's just that then we move on to the next thing. So the issue of monitoring is very questionable in my view. And the authority that we have of monitoring. So the authority and the responsibility, I believe, is very appropriate, but it is the word soul that has me concerned.
Move to delete it.
Senator Junkberg, did you have a comment on this?
Well, yes. I think Senator Torres-Ray is kind of onto something in the wording, and, you know, I'm totally not opposed to having more input on things, but especially when you get into lines 1.3, the permanent professional staff position, read this carefully with me, shall also serve as a non-voting member of the Permanent School Advisory Committee and shall assist the committee with preparation of the report required under Section 127A30. So we're saying we think it's important enough to put a permanent staff person in, but now we're going to bring all these new people, and the permanent staff person is going to take all their time to train the new people in instead of managing the fund. So it's troubling the way this is put together. You know, if we think it's important, let's put a staff person there. But I don't think it should be the same staff person now trying to train these people, get them up to speed on what we're trying to do here, and help them put together a report. That kind of takes the whole burden and puts it someplace else in saying the report's more important than managing the land. It's kind of a weird mix of you can't do both things at once if it's that important. So it's.
But I don't see any training component here. I think the report that it's being referred to is the recommendations on lines 2.6 through 2.9 that talks about reviews the policies, shall recommend necessary changes in statutes, policy implementation, So I'm not training them, but taking their input and compiling it. Would that
Madam
be
Chair,
more
having
accurate?
Sat on a few advisory committees, anybody that's there that's responsible and knows what's going on is the primary training agent on that committee first and foremost, and then helps put the thing together. Because typically new people that come on board of any committee don't have any idea where the starting point is, and they need to be brought up to speed.
Okay. Senator Lynch.
Okay. Madam Chair. Senator Jungbauer, I don't see this staff person as being the trainer of the committee at all. And rather, I would hope that the members that would be appointed to the committee are appointed there because they are bringing some expertise to the table in some fashion or another. And I would hope that together between between this staff person and the committee, that they felt that they were really a team working to support the Permanent School Trust Fund. By virtue of this, I think what maybe is different here is people are being invited to be a part of this advisory committee, and there's even a section in there that says members of the legislature shall be given an opportunity to recommend candidates. They're being invited to come into this process because of the expertise that they bring to the table, and that is really, I think, what we have seen is needed and could be helpful.
And a question from Senator Stumpf?
It's on a different issue.
Okay, another issue. Absolutely.
This is for Mr. Meyer. If you took the land that that you actually could sell, not counting the, you know, in the Superior Forest up there, what do you think the value of that would be? I'll give you kind of an insight into where my question's coming from. Maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago, you know, swampland and brushland was like $50 an acre or something like that. Up in northern Minnesota now, I've talked to a number of different counties, and it ranges from, on the low side, $1,000 an acre to anywhere from $3,000 just for deer hunting. Just for hunting land. So if you took all of that land marginal land that would be sold, what would be a total value put on that?
Madam Chair, Senator Stumpf, it's very difficult to answer. A lot of these parcels are small 40-acre parcels that don't have any access. There's no access to them, so that's going to affect the appraised value of those lands. But the value that we have on some of the lands is that there's counties, state, federals, they're all intermixed, so we're managing them as blocks of land. So you get larger value for the timber. There's more people who want to come in there and harvest 160 acres, 250 acres of timber, rather than try to get just revenue off of the state forest land. But before I answer that, you have to look at 127A.31 that says the goal of the Permanent School Fund is to secure the maximum long-term economic return from the school trust lands consistent with the fiduciary responsibilities imposed by the trust relationship with the established in the Constitution with sound natural resource conservation and management principles and with other specific policies stated in law. So really law wouldn't allow us just to go out and sell those lands because it's not in the best long-term interest. At least I don't believe that. If the legislature told us to do that or directed the department to do that, we would. Again, I think you stated it pretty well, 1,000 to 3,000 acres, and take 2.3 million acres of forested lands, and there would be your number probably.
So when you thank you, Madam Chair. When you look at the value of that of those school trust fund acres, and if you, let's say, just put them in the hands of the state retirement or state board of investment, the return on that would be immense. It would be in the hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars per year. My point isn't so much that we're not maximizing that resource for our schools. My point is that everybody in the state is actually being kind of funded in a way through the education system. So when you go up there and hike around in Superior National Forest and enjoy those beautiful views over the ledges, you're doing it at the expense, to a little bit of a degree, of the education system in the state of Minnesota. So my point is that in the Constitution, it says that we're supposed to fund our school system. That means every taxpayer in the state, everybody that has a responsibility and a connection to the state, needs to pony up adequate resources to deliver a good education system as they enjoy these other natural resource kinds of things. And we haven't been doing that. And so we're kind of at a point where we're squabbling over, you know, $8 million here or $16 million there, when we have such a big responsibility and need. And it's kind of unfortunate. I mean, if we were strictly going to make the maximum dollars out of this, we wouldn't be hanging on and asking the department to manage these forests here and that chunk of wetlands there and so on. So we're in a kind of, I mean, these are important, but we're kind of missing the big picture, I think, in the sense of what we're doing.
Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair, Senator Stump, I don't have the pleasure of serving on your finance division.
Oh, that's terrible.
But but I would just caution us, and I think that the advisory committee, I hope that this is something that they would take a look at and would come back with some information to the legislature in this regard. But I believe that there are some parcels, particularly in mineral rights, that we probably want to keep very close by.
I'm using it.
The land sales averaged approximately $180,000 a year in trust revenue. I'm not here to tell you that that's high or low. That's just the fact. But there's certainly no shortage of things that the advisory committee can spend some time and energy on. And I think with a bolstered communication between the department and the advisory committee, and with a stronger field on the advisory committee, that this group and our other legislative colleagues can be very confident in the material that comes forth from this committee.
Well, I think that's a very good point, Senator Lynch, because for those of us who spent two days on that trip, I think some of us who are supporting this kind of legislation, it helps answer unanswered questions, concerns that came up repeatedly of what if, how could we support the DNR, make sure they have the resources, the expertise, other perspectives, and to be very confident that this land is being managed so, again, we can squeeze every dollar out of it and also keep with its original mission. So that's, I think, where, you know, for some of us who were there and repeatedly saw lands and excellent, excellent presentations from the DNR, they were just tremendous. To be able to support their efforts to make sure that this land is managed, because that is our responsibility. Senator Hahn.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I think Senator Stump is right. I think that some of the questions that I was asking, and I think some of the others that have come about, to me, the federal government at the time that the nation was formed and then as a part of the Northwest Ordinance and then carried into the Organic Act of the state of Minnesota, there was an asset, a huge, huge asset that was put in the trust of the state of Minnesota to be used for the purposes of providing education. That, in my mind, doesn't mean that you have to preserve it in its original form. Your duty is to say, how do we take that asset and make the most of it so that we can fund education? I think your point is exactly right, that when I look at, we've got an asset base of $600 million, and we're getting a 3-4% return on that, I don't know that anybody would say that's a stellar performance of an asset base for a huge amount of money. And I don't know what the historical performance has been. I don't have going back to the last 150 years, what that asset base was originally and how it's grown or diminished over time, I don't know. But I guess that's the kind of the question that I've been wrestling with is I just want to know how we're using that asset base and whether it really is being used productively. And I don't know and don't have a feel yet for whether it is or not. And I'm not trying to suggest that DNR hasn't been doing what it's doing and doing it well. I don't know that. But as this issue has come about, it's become a frustration for me not to be able to get a feel for that question and even how do we answer it. It's one thing to say, well, we've got all this land and we're trying to preserve it and do different things, and that's great, but what should we expect? What is the return we should expect from that asset?
Madam Chair?
So.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you look at the map of the state where these lands are, the whole state was that little checkerboard with the 16th and 36th section of land in every township. So you know that in most of the state, that land was sold off. It was sold off probably, you know, for agriculture and wanting to get more families in the area so that they could have schools and establish communities. But I think what Senator Stumpf, I didn't hear him advocating selling it all off, but he was kind of asking for some value if some of these that are more marginal lands that aren't really producing anything, some of those borderline wetlands, whether the sale of it would in fact be the better choice. And I don't know who weighs those things right now. I think the major thing rather than selling has been to try to trade them for areas that are more productive. But obviously, once upon a time, it was possible to sell some of those lands, and I presume that could certainly be a part of the that discussion, whether it comes from the advisory committee or recommendations from the department or where or from the legislature.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, just first I need to go back to Senator Hahn's statement real quickly. Mr. That $600 million is actually the value of the permanent school trust fund, the money that's in the bank. We have nothing to do with that. The money that we generate goes into that account. So I don't know if you're questioning how the Board of Investment operates those funds.
Well, no, I'm not, and I appreciate that distinction. I probably misspoke. I don't know what the value of the land is, and I've not heard anybody tell us what the value of that asset is. I suspect it's more than $600 million, which would make the return on that asset even less. We're getting 4% on the $600 that's in the fund right now, not on the value of the asset alone. So I you're right. I don't mean to confuse that, but I don't know what the value of that asset is.
Madam Chair, and we can come up with some estimates, but appraisals, certainly as you're looking at several mineral rights, it all depends on what people find there as exploration goes on, which the opportunities, depending on what takes place, are pretty huge for the permanent school fund. But there's also some environmental impacts that we're dealing with as well. As you look at the opportunities that lie in the future, I don't know if we would want to be selling all of our wetlands right now. As people look at wetland credits, certainly maybe sell them to counties or other people who need them. There's probably some, and that'd be one idea that we could come back with. As we talk about the Climate Change Advisory Group recommendations this session, carbon sequestration, the 54,000 acres of peatland SNAs that were statutorily given to the Department of Natural Resources and I believe are in trust status, have huge opportunities as we come into a climate carbon trading system into the state. I think the revenues that we look at, that opportunity for what people may think is marginal land now, are going to be pretty impressive as we move into the future as well.
Senator Olson and then Senator Torres-Wray.
Thank you. I support this bill, but I have a question that's not related, but all this talk about money and these public lands, are we paying PILT dollars on any of these? You know,
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, the PILT payment for trust lands is 50 cents an acre, I believe.
So is that shown in the spreadsheet anywhere? I didn't see that. So,
Madam Chair, members, PILT comes on the tax bill as a general fund appropriation. So you wouldn't see that. That wouldn't show up on this spreadsheet at all.
Just a quick follow-up. Where would it be deducted from then? Because it must be coming out of the school trust, isn't it?
The PILT payment?
No.
We won't go there then.
We'll come back with another idea. I got that one written down.
Yeah.
So next was Senator Rummel. I missed her. Excuse me.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to reinforce what Mr. Myers said, and which I think also reinforces the need for the kind of oversight that Senator Lynch is asking for, because the complexity of the era we're moving into with carbon trading and carbon auctioning and all those things may make things that do not look valuable today very valuable in the years to come. So it's complex, and we do need people with the kind of skills and background that can give us advice about what that future is.
Thank you, Senator Rummel. Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Lynch, I'm going to go back to the original question I had. I do appreciate the work that you've put into this language, and I do strongly agree with you that we really need to have this in place. I do want to ask you the question about assigning absolute authority and responsibility and whether or not removing, deleting the word soul will change your language to a point that you might not want to do that, and I'd like to ask you to please tell us.
Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair, Senator Torres-Ray, thank you for going back to that. So on line 1.6, I believe that you are suggesting that the word soul be deleted. So it read, the Commissioner of Natural Resources has the authority. And I if that's your amendment, I would consider that a friendly amendment.
I would like to propose that amendment, Madam Chair, to Senate File 2811 so that it will read, the Commissioner of Natural Resources has the authority and responsibility for the administration, etc.
Okay, Senator Torres-Ray has moved that on line 1.6 the word soul be stricken and the word the inserted. Is there any discussion? Senator Olsen.
This is not my area, but Senator Olsen would say you've got too many the's in there. So,
don't, Mr. Chairman or Madam Chair, don't put words in my mouth.
That's where I'm learning.
She has time to weigh in.
Okay, that's fair. But I think wouldn't it be better just to drop and just have Natural Resources has authority and responsibility for the administration. I can't believe
Senator Erickson Ropes, yes. Do you want to respond?
Yeah, I think Senator Olsen and I are on the same page. I think if you use the as a substitute for soul, it's the same sort of thing. Has the authority. People could read it that way. So if you just say he has authority, the is a definitive article, so you'd be defining him as the authority. So I would also favor just dropping any article there. Just say has authority and responsibility.
So to Senator Torres-Ray, would you
thank you, Madam Chair.
Consider
your
amendment?
I agree with that. So the amendment would be that the Commissioner of Natural Resources has authority and responsibility for the administration. So it's just a delete of the word soul.
Just delete soul.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we are back to an amendment made by Senator Torres-Ray on line 1.6 to strike the word soul. And no other word is inserted. Any more discussion? All those in favor of the amendment made by Senator Torres-Ray, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. The motion passes. Any? Is there any other discussion on Senate File 2811? Senator Lynch, would you like to make a motion to move this forward? I believe it goes to the Government Operations and State and Local Government Oversight Committee.
Madam Chair, I would move Senate File 2811 be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on State and Local Government.
Any more discussion on that motion? All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign.
Aye.
The motion passes.
Madam Chair, members.
Senator Hand.
Before we go on, I just wanted to, we had a very interesting little history lesson here this afternoon, and thank you, Senator Stumpf and others who've acquainted us with our past and the Northwest Ordinance and the Land Ordinance and all those things. And I just wanted to, before that passed, just refer the committee to one other section of the Northwest Ordinance that talks about education. In fact, it's the only place that education is mentioned in a federal document. You know, it's completely absent from the Constitution, even though the Northwest Ordinance was adopted the same year that the federal Constitution was adopted. And there's a statement about education at Northwest Ordinance, and this is what it says. Religion, morality, and knowledge being necessary to good government and the happiness of mankind, schools, and the means of education shall forever be encouraged. And the reason I point that out is because the founders put together these ideas, religion, morality, and knowledge, and linked them with schools. And I just think that's an interesting comment on where our founders were and what they thought the purpose of education was. And, in fact, one of the reasons why the land itself was given was to provide for that sort of local control of accomplishing that very purpose. So nothing, no votes or anything. I just wanted to point that out for the historical reference of the members of the committee.
It has been a great day for history in the Education Committee today. So thank you to Senator Stumpf and Senator Hand. And we have Senator Wieger back at the table with Senate File Number 2370, the P20 Education Partnership.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I have an author's amendment, A1.
Very good. Could we have that passed out, please? And it should be in our packets.
And I will move the A1 amendment.
All right. Let's find the A1 amendment. Okay. Senator Wieger moves the A1 amendment to Senate File 2370. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion passes.
Thank you. Madam Chair, the P16, P20, or perhaps some other term you might give it, but what we're talking about is this. Having the education system increase the dialogue with early ed, with K-12, and higher ed. It's those areas having more discussion so that we can have a seamless transition for those learners as they progress through the system. We now have a P16 council. It was started about 2002, pretty much operational in 03, voluntary. Legislature is not represented, but I want to commend that group for the job it has been doing. I have background that was prepared on the P16 partnership. Its current chair is Robert Brunix, president of the U of M. When Commissioner Segrin chaired it the previous year, there would be information posted on the website from the Department of Ed. But they're focused on the types of activities to increase the coordination of activities. And I'm not here to criticize that at all. In fact, I'm here to say we should be at the table. And several states have gone that direction. The need for this became clear to me when I became chair of this committee, and one of my responsibilities was to be a rep to the Education Commission of States. Senator Pappas, I believe, is the other rep, and then Representative Burns and Representative Greiling, and had our first meeting that I went to this summer. And a lot of the discussion was on P16 or P20 and, you know, what are you doing, the update? And I had to scramble and, you know, get some notes and look at the website because, you know, we have not been a part of that. I want to thank Representative Mariani. He, as the House Ed Chair, has not attended the meetings in that capacity, but through his other work that he's involved in, he's been able to go, and he commended those activities that are being done. But this proposal, as amended, would put the legislators at the table in this discussion, and it also adds some additional stakeholders in the process. We all know about the increasing importance of early education. We're looking at What do we have? Over 150 members in Early Childhood Caucus. We're all talking primarily about early intervention. We're talking about how we can have students ready for K. And
as we do that, we need to have higher ed also discussing that with K-12 and with early ed. And you need to be involved as well. I think this issue has come into play even recently, Madam Chair, you and Senator Olson working on literacy instruction, and I believe we may have some legislation coming on that. But the various parts of the system are not silos. They need to increase the dialogue. It's being done to a limited extent, but we, as funders, we as policymakers need to be at the table, and that's really the bottom line. I could have brought people from the Education Commission of States. I have, but to save money, I just have a handout from them. It's a briefing memo. It will give you background on what's being done in other states. It's referred to as P16 here. My reference is P20 because of higher ed through postgraduate, and actually if you talk to staff persons at the Education Commission of States, that's what they would prefer. But the main intent here is for legislators to be at the table. So that's the proposal, and I have, again, the background information on what's being done now, and they are meeting. I'm happy with that, but we need to be a part of it. And one other issue, too, that I think is very important is the whole idea of tracking progress and accountability. The student identifier, through the MARS indicator now for seeing how students do through the system. We're trying to get a better handle on achievement gap and what might be going wrong. What about those so-called dashboard indicators indicating that student needs intervention for help? Well, as we put millions and millions of dollars more into education, this type of identification for those that do participate in early ed, we need to see that as well. So that's part of the motivation to look at how the system can work more cooperatively together, particularly we as legislators. The rest of the country is going that direction. We have, but when I say we, it hasn't been the legislators involved in that discussion. So I would urge your support. And just in the previous set of bills, we acknowledged the close relationship we've had in working with the other body, and Representative Dietrich being here for 2.5 hours. Representative Swales has been here for nearly 2.5 hours as well. She'll be carrying that legislation in a bipartisan manner in the other body. So we're trying to work together on a mutual cause, and I would stand for any questions.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Wieger. This is a great committee. I have had the chance to serve on that committee before I was in legislature. I was the state president of Minnesota PTA, and they have a position at the table. But I'm confused about the legislative thing. Now, I wasn't looking at legislators at the time as, you know, as a potential legislator, but I think that's where I met Senator Olson the first time. You probably don't remember a parent many years ago, but didn't you attend those meetings? And I also met Representative Greiling at those meetings.
Which meeting?
The P16 roundtable. Maybe the legislators were just attending for general information.
A long time.
But you were around the table and had name cards, so I'm just a little confused because from my recollection of those days, I thought you were members.
Madam Chair, I'm not sure if it was specifically that. There were some years ago that there was a study done on higher ed and integration of the whole thing, but that's kind of quite a few years back. Is that what you're referring to?
Well,
I was a part of that.
Probably 4 or 5 years ago, but it was the P16 roundtable. Oh, longer than that. Wow.
Could have been a show and tell, but the right now, there is not that formal involvement.
Okay. All
right. And the intent is not for us to get deep in the weeds of telling those organizations what to do, but it's to be a part of the discussion on critical issues that we're talking about throughout the session.
Right. But then we talk about the achievement gap. We talk about workforce development. It's not just education. It's not just the business community. And it's not just all these different group and silos, but bringing everyone to the table who has a stake in this. And that's what I think is really critical, is that when you look at this list, you do have all of those folks who have something at stake and need to be talking to each other to make sure that not only we close the achievement gap, but also that we make sure that our young people are prepared for future jobs. And Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, I hope it's a friendly amendment, but I think Senator Saltzman and I would like to see on page 2.35 an amendment. Delete the word quality and insert capability to enhance student achievement.
And if I might also speak to that, as you referenced earlier, Senator Olson and I are working on how we can ensure that our teachers have the skills they need to address student achievement. So it's not just quality, but really to target it to make sure that it is regarding their achievement. And I don't know, and I think having all these folks at the table again, having higher ed and school principals and school districts, will ensure that higher education sees what their role can be in closing the achievement gap.
That's very friendly. I've exhausted my author amendments, so if you wanted to move that, Senator Olson.
Sure.
So, Senator Olson, if you could repeat that, there is a motion by Senator Olson which will read on line 2.35, delete quality and insert
capability to enhance student achievement. So it would be improving educator capability to enhance student achievement.
All right. Is there any discussion on that motion? All right. All those in favor of the current motion on line 2.35 to read improving educator capability to enhance student achievement, please say aye.
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 All those opposed, same sign. The motion passes.
Madam Chair.
Any other discussion? Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Wigger, I support this effort, and I think it is important that we maintain communication and work with these different stakeholders to educate our children and to find new and better ways to do it. You're asking the legislature to appoint 25 members of different groups, including a nonprofit organization, MMEP, which is 16. And my question is, I have two questions. One is it the intent that this particular group will help us find or put reports, which we have plenty of reports about how to do it? Or in your view, what is that this group would actually do? Because it's just really not clear to me when you say create a seamless system of education. That is such a huge mandate. And then my second question is in terms of selecting the list of the 25.
30 now.
What is kind of the criteria for selecting? How do we determine that these 16 or 25 or 30 people are the ones? Because I do see a nonprofit organization, I can think of about 7 that should be here, kind of in those terms. So my question is, what is actually the mandate to this group? And second, how do we select the membership? How did you come up with these 26?
Okay. Madam Chair, Senator Torres-Ray, the powers Senator and duties Wigger. And the report are listed at 2.20, and in general it starts out with the intent, and then the specific deliverables that we would look for in a report are listed in sequence. If there's a question as to the persons that are going to be appointed, I don't believe it's the legislature that appoints each one, and I could ask Ms. Junker, if there's, I don't believe it's the legislature that appoints each member. It's fairly defined as to the organization, the business partnership, Chamber of Commerce, or minority education partnership. They have positions right now where it's the chief exec from those groups, and so we would not be screening those members. For members of the legislature, it would be policy chairs, whereas designated, and then the minority party, and that was a very good suggestion, they would select theirs per the outline. And is it a big chunk of responsibilities that are being asked? Yes, but these are the issues that we're debating, and that's why, you know, this group, the talent, the synergism that exists is the best vehicle I see for us being a part of the discussion, and hopefully when we're in session and talking about these, we would have had some representation at the table. And as I said initially, this is what other states are doing, and I don't like, you know, other states looking back to see why aren't legislators in Minnesota, for example, involved in something as basic as P16, P20 planning. So, you know, if there's some suggestions as to the report, you know, we can work on that, but I primarily took it on what they're working on right now and then added a couple of things about some of the emerging issues that you have identified in your own work groups.
Thank you, Senator Wade.
Are there other questions? Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Wigger, you and I have had this conversation before, and this is not meant in any way to be unfriendly. The case, the P16 partnership currently exists in a certain format, and have we got their blessing? Are they, we're calling this an education partnership. Do they want us as partners? What have we heard from them?
Senator Wigger.
Madam Chair, Senator Rummel, there hasn't been a formal communication. There's been advice from different members indicating support just individually. Others have said they would prefer that they not have legislative involvement. Thank you. And so they have not taken a position, at least if they have, it hasn't been shared with me. But several members have offered support. We could have had different letters of support if you need that, but frankly, I thought it was pretty basic as to our lack of not being at the table as to why we need to be there. But, you know, the case, there has been some suggestion that maybe the legislature would be meddling, intervening. Well, friends, we're involved in these policies right now, and you know, if there shouldn't be a group that we're going to be involved with like this, then I can't think of what other types of groups What's that would bill? Take priority.
Senator Rommel, did you have a follow-up?
No.
I don't want to rush this, but...
Yeah, go ahead.
Madam Chair, I would move that Senate File 2370, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-refer to state and local government.
All right, there is a motion for Senate File 2370 to be passed as amended, to be moved as amended. All those... Is there further discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. And the motion passes. And 2370
Thank you.
Will be going to
state and local.
The state and local government.
Madam Chair, I just reverting now to general.
Senator Wigger has some comments for our committee. And thank you so much for all this legislation today. It was excellent.
Well, and that almost concludes my what I have. And the reason we had these now was recall that we asked you to, you know, get those bills in. I know everyone's working hard. And if you have a request for a hearing, please contact our office, Gretchen or Jen, so they can get that scheduled. And we have the schedule there. There's been some changes, and as you know, that's how it works. But if there's something that you'd like scheduled, let us know. I believe we'll be taking a couple of things up at the next meeting, but if you... that's been changed, but if there's something that you'd like to share with me, you know, please let us know, because we'd like to have the calendar on track. As to whether there'll be an omnibus bill on policy, probably there will be, but Senator Stump, we realize that so many of what we, so many of the bills that we have also will have a fiscal implication, and when that's the case, it's obviously going to go through Senator Stump's committee. For those items, though, that are exclusively policy related, it could pass out to the floor or another committee, but it also might be a part of an omnibus bill that would develop. And so it's sort of a dual track on that. That's what I've discussed with some of my others, colleagues in the House, representatives. Obviously, we have to talk with them because we don't put an omnibus bill together if they don't have one, and vice versa. But I believe that is where they're headed as well. Any questions on the committee calendar, bill requests for hearings, or other items?
Okay. With that, meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
With all this, once you get it typed up, who reads it?
Whoever wants to.